Hello.
Hello.
I'm Kendra.
And I'm August.
And you're listening to Book Dumb, the bookcast brought to you by a couple of dummies.
This week, our episode is our 2021 reading bracket, and it's our second half of this. We have an earlier episode where we cover January through the beginning of July, and now we are talking about our reads through July through December. So we each have some fiction and nonfiction picks, and I know mine came out differently than my top five of the year. I don't know about Kendra, but we'll see.
So could you explain why you might get different results with this bracket versus like the ranking it from top five of the year?
So I think some of my impressions of books have changed over time. And I know last minute when we were recording our top five, I did change the numbers around even during our recording. So like that impacted it as well. But just in our first half of the year, I read some amazing books. So like American Psycho was my top pick for fiction, and In the Dream House was my top pick for nonfiction. But I also read some great favorites like Clarice Lispector's The Hour of the Star in the early half of the year. So that didn't get picked. I picked American Psycho over that. But if you listen to our top five favorites, Hour of the Star was my favorite book of the year. And I stand by that. But when we recorded our January through June picks at like beginning of July too, I think was a little in there because we discussed our current reads. I was really liking American Psycho at that time, and I still love American Psycho, and that was in my top five as well. So just perspectives and opinions change over time.
Yes, I think that's definitely the case. And also the way these brackets are lined up, like if you have seen the brackets before, the bracket is done by Books with Buzzy. And it's also based on like traditional brackets. You see them all the time for like if you're part of Bachelor Nation or if you're into sports, like you make brackets all the time where you're competing, like you're constantly pitting two favorites against each other. And so sometimes one favorite gets knocked out pretty early, even though you would still like classify it as a favorite.
And so that happened, and that is why this bracket was so damn hard to do. Yeah, this was definitely, this is rough. And then picking between our picks for our top books of the year, we'll get into that at the end. It was hard. We both read a lot of great books this last year.
Yeah, it was really difficult. I actually found this, however, a bit easier than like the list of five.
Yeah.
Mostly because it like forces a decision. Like you could only choose one when you pit them against each other. And so I like this bracket.
Also, I feel like it's nice looking month by month, and it's easier to like break up your top picks that way. But before we jump too much more into this, we've just been like going on. What are you reading right now? Can you let me know, please?
I would absolutely love to. So I'm rereading Jane Eyre. I'm listening to the Thandi Newton reading of it. She's from Westworld. She's, I don't remember who her character's name is, but she's amazing in it.
Maeve,
thank you. And this is one of the best audiobooks I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, wow. Oh my gosh. I'm absolutely loving it. Like I loved Jane Eyre before. That was more of like a 4-star read, but this experience is for sure a 5-star.
Wow. I can't even imagine her reading it. Like that just sounds like a perfect experience.
I mean, she's obviously a fantastic actress, but this just proves to me she's also a great voice actress. Like I know there was a lot of pushback when the trend started to like bring famous actors and actresses to read audiobooks because people were like, there are professional voice actors who do this and who do a better job of it too. But not Thandi Newton. She's killing it. She does such a great job. She does all these fun accents and it's just really engaging. Mm-hmm. And I forgot how awful Mr. Rochester is. Like
the worst.
He's disgusting and he's controlling and like manipulative. And I think I'd let my memory of Michael Fassbender as Mr. Rochester in the adaptation really like blind me to how awful he is in the book. So I needed this refresher.
Fair. So big question. Are you going to read White Sargasso Sea after
I'm reading this next. So that's one of the reasons I reread it is because I want to read White Sargasso Sea. I was like about to pick it up, but I was like, I actually don't remember what happens in Jane Eyre.
I am so excited for you. Oh my God.
So I need to reread Jane. I need to finish Jane Eyre first, which I'm almost done. I only have like 3 hours left.
Nice. Wow. Oh God. I might read White Sargasso Sea with you if you'll let me.
We could do that.
I'm so excited for you, your first Jean Rees.
I know. I'm I'm excited and anxious.
Yeah, as you should be. So do you want to hear what I'm reading right now? Because I know you'll love it.
I do. I really, really want to hear it.
I'm reading The Death of Vivek Oji with some people on Instagram, and I'm almost done with it. I have like 40 pages left, 50 pages left, and I love it so much. I understand the hype. I'm really scared, but also excited to see what happens. Definitely going to read more Akwaeke Emezi after this. I really like their writing, just the writing style. I'm super glad that you let me borrow your physical copy, because I can't imagine listening to an audiobook of it. I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much as I am, but for sure want to read Freshwater after this and then everything else that they publish, because wow, the talent.
Totally agree. I think Emezi is probably my favorite author right now.
Yeah.
They are just fantastic. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I would read Freshwater with you.
Ooh, yay. Yeah. I've been reading a lot of Death of Vivek at work, and I've just been like sucked into it. I'll read like 70 pages at a time and not even realize that I've read that much, which hasn't happened in a while. So big love for this book so far.
I totally agree. And I agree that maybe an audiobook isn't the right fit for this book, because the craft is so strong that I think, like, if you can get a physical copy, I think it's worth it.
Yeah. But who knows, maybe I'll listen to an audiobook of it like down the line now that I've been reading the physical copy. I can see myself doing that.
Totally. Totally.
Well, great. Well, should we jump on into this bracket?
Let's do it. Do you want to remind the folks what was the winner of your first half of the year?
Yeah. So my picks for January through June were American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis. Pick up this book used, hate him. Great book. And then my nonfiction favorite was In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. Love her. Just an absolute legend. We'll read anything that she publishes ever.
Totally agree. Another favorite writer. So for the first half of the year, my fiction pick was A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. Super obviously, we love this book. Nothing else to say about it. Nonfiction book. My favorite nonfiction book for the first half of the year was Little Weirds by Jenny Slate. Also a big, big fan of this one.
On Little Weirds, I think that might be one of the next audiobooks I listen to.
Yeah.
Because I'm also reading Harlem Shuffle right now, and I'm almost done with that. I have like 4 hours left, and it's great. There's a lot happening, so I need something funny and personable. So
yes, I think Little Weirds will be fantastic for that.
Yeah. I'm just taking your 2021 early reads and reading them right now for my 2022 early reads.
That's perfect.
Perfect swap. Okay. So should we jump on into our brackets? So we're each going to share our fiction picks for each month and then get into our nonfiction picks before we move on to the next month. So we're going to be listing a lot of titles here. We'll try to keep it organized. Chaos may ensue. Who knows?
Yeah. When in doubt, just buy all the books we name.
Or get them from your local library if you have one. Yeah,
of course. Or whatever, however you receive books.
Yes.
Pick them up.
Great. So do you want to let me know what your top fiction pick was for July?
Paradise Rot by Jenny Haval.
Not surprised.
Not surprised. Really great book. Really creepy, and love the fungus imagery and the rotting imagery. There's a lot of pee in it too.
Love that. I still really want to read that book. I'm going to, maybe I'll borrow it from you when I return Death of Vivek.
Yeah. I'll be your library.
We'll just have some book swaps. I can give you something. It's fine.
Of course. Of course.
Great. My top fiction pick for July was The Ballad of the Sad Cafe by Carson McCullers. This is a short story collection, and it includes The Ballad of the Sad Cafe. I read all the short stories in this collection, but Ballad of the Sad Cafe was definitely my favorite. Really liked McCullers' like use of Southern landscapes and also the inclusion of music and strong female characters and strange female characters throughout these stories. So I would recommend it. If you want something nice and relatively easy in relation to like American Gothic, pick it up.
That's amazing. Okay, so for July, for nonfiction, I have Intimations by Zadie Smith. This really was just a winner by default. It's actually not very good. I mean, it's good. It's fine. It's 3 stars, but it's not Zadie's best work. And it was just the only nonfiction I read in that month. But it's a bunch of meditations on life, like during the pandemic for her.
Nice. One that I want to read, but there's some other Zadie Smith books that I would like to get to first. My top pick is Crying in H Mart by Michelle Zauner. I loved this book. This is a memoir of the singer and main member of the band Japanese Breakfast, tying to her experience after the loss of her mother and her relationship to her cultural identity as a Korean American. This was just like one of the best memoirs I have ever read. I would highly recommend it. I think that it's just beautifully written, and I want to get a copy for my mom and my sister and like a bunch of people because, wow, it's just so great.
I totally agree. One of the best books I read this year as well.
Yeah. And also everyone that we tell to read it, that reads it, loves it. So universally adored, quite possibly.
I think 100%. Also, like, Japanese Breakfast, the music is fantastic. So
yeah, yeah. And a film adaptation is coming out, right?
Yes, of the memoir. Yeah. Which I'm kind of like, I'm very interested, but how is that going to happen?
Yeah, maybe it'll be like when Augustine Burroughs's Running with Scissors was adapted, but that wasn't a really great adaptation. So hopefully if Sonner's behind it, I know Japanese Breakfast is doing the music for it. Hopefully mm-hmm. it turns out well.
I think it probably will. I think she's also very funny in the book, despite mm-hmm. how heavy it is. So I could see them playing it off as like, kind of a bit of a comedy, but also like a very serious drama.
Yeah, kind of reminds me, I haven't seen this yet, but I've heard that it's similar to that movie that Awkwafina did, The Farewell, which is about the loss of the grandmother. Yeah,
yeah, I had that in mind as well, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I want to see it. It's been on my to watch list for a while, but apparently it's really good.
Awesome. Yeah,
nice. Well, shall we go on over to August, and will you let me know what your favorite fiction was?
This one's a
work of fiction.
Sorry. That's okay. My favorite work of fiction from August, which surprised me, was The Push, which we have read, or we were given. That's what I meant to say. We were given, but I actually just listened to the audiobook, and it was really good. I honestly just didn't really like a lot of the books I read in August, so that's one of the reasons it went out. But also, it was very interesting. It's about a mother who is concerned about whether or not her daughter is a psychopath, more or less. And her daughter's young too. So there are moments where you're like, you're crazy, you're a bad mom. And other moments where you're like, actually, your daughter might be a little unhinged. And I mean that like authentically. So yeah, it's a lot of like, we need to talk about Kevin, if you've seen that movie or read the book.
That's what I was about to ask, if it's like that. So I mean, love, we need to talk about Kevin. So for sure, want to read that soon. Did you like the audiobook for it?
Yeah, it was like a really easy to follow along, very like engaging reader. Nice. It's pretty good. I don't know how I'd feel about it if I read it. That makes sense. Okay. So what is your fiction pick for August?
It is Stoner by John Williams, a perfect book. I see that a lot of people are reading this right now, which is exciting because it's a beautiful book, beautiful cover, beautiful content, but wow, is it sad. So just be wary of that if you're reading it right now. Stoner follows the life of a man named Stoner who lives in rural Missouri and goes to Mizzou, becomes obsessed and in love with English literature, and begins to study that and eventually becomes a professor. And he just lives a life that isn't necessarily what he expected or wanted. And it gets into all of that. And I just think that it's one of the most beautiful books that I've read in a really long time. And I'd recommend it highly.
That's awesome. I'm glad to see other people are reading it too.
Yeah. It's also just such a beautiful book. If you have the one, you know, it has that beautiful image of a man on the cover. And it's like in this old timey suit and his hands in his pocket. He's got his tiny glasses. Love it. It's one of my favorite like covers of all time, I would say.
I agree. Also, I would say that every time I see that cover, I'm like, I think August has that exact outfit.
That's the goal, honestly. If I've tried to rock the tiny glasses, can't do it, but love everything about that vibe. It's just 10 out of 10 perfection for me.
I feel that. Okay. Are you ready for me to share my nonfiction pick for August?
Yeah.
So that's Dear Santhurin by Akweke Emezi.
Nice. Love them.
Yep. Speak of the god themselves. Just absolutely amazing. This is a series of letters to people in their life, also people that they've never met but who admire, and it's a bunch of reflections on specific moments in their lives that are related to that person, and it's very personable but also very relatable. Sorry, it's very personal but also very relatable, and just as everything that they write is stunning, just absolutely stellar, and I highly recommend it. 5 out of 5.
I want to read that so badly. Like, not just because I'm loving Death of Vivek, but because that's also been on my TBR ever since I heard about it. Just love a messy. Wow. Talent. Okay. I do not have a nonfiction pick for this month because I did not read any nonfiction. So there it is.
It happens, dude.
Yeah. So we are going to continue on to September now. And then from there, we are going to get into what won out between these brackets. And then we're going to get into October through December. So just if you're listening, that's the context of where we're going from here. So Kendra, what was your favorite work of fiction from September?
Things We Lost in the Fire. Absolutely love this book, or collection of short stories, I should say. Read it for spooky, getting ready for spooky season. Highly recommend. Bunch of stunning stories in there. I think my favorite one is the one with the skull. Sorry, I can't remember the names. That's the problem with these short story collections, is a lot of them do tend to bleed together. And if I don't have a physical copy, I don't remember any of the names of the stories. So I would just recommend the whole one.
Yeah, I had the same experience listening to that, but I think every short story in that collection is worth reading, so agree with your pick. My top pick from September, also getting ready for spooky season, is Night Bitch, which is a perfect book. It's by Rachel Yoder. It's about essentially a single mom, not getting a lot of support from her husband and the baby's father, raising this two-year-old, and she begins to believe that she's turning into a dog. She's also a performance artist and has a lot going on, and meets some other mothers at her local library. It's a wild, crazy story. It's very strange, obviously. A woman thinks that she's turning into a dog, but it's perfect. I am excited that there's an adaptation coming out with Amy Adams, right? Yeah, legend. It's going to be great. Super excited to see that. And I'm going to reread it. Kendra kindly got me the book for, was it my birthday? Yeah, my birthday. And I haven't reread it since getting it because I had listened to it, but I'm excited to. I think I might reread it this year.
I would join you in that because I also listened to it. And I also think it was absolutely fantastic. I was really surprised, to be honest. Conceptually, I was like, oh, it's going to be interesting, but I'm not going to love it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. So I think reading a physical copy is needed.
Yeah, it was definitely not that I expected it to be bad, but I didn't expect it to be that good. So really love it. And I think I don't know if Rachel Yoder has any other books out. I'm going to check that out, but whatever she publishes next, I will read.
Definitely joining you in that. Okay. You ready for my nonfiction pick for September?
Yes.
Crying in H Mart.
Yay.
Obviously, you must have recommended it to me. I was like, okay. And I loved it as well. So fantastic. Everyone should read it.
Mm-hmm. A perfect pick. My top nonfiction pick for September was the only one that I read, and that's The Intersectional Internet. I do not remember. I think it's by Dr. Noble, I believe. I read this for a project for school, and it was really interesting, just about different forms of racism that we see in our experience online. So really enlightening. They have another book called Algorithms of Oppression that I really want to read. And that's how search engines have racism encoded into them. Really interested in that. So if you're wanting to learn a little bit about how racism is present and sexism is present in online experiences for a variety of peoples, I would check it out.
That sounds super interesting. And I'm glad you read it, because I don't think I quite have the capacity right now to read it.
Yeah.
But I want it on my radar at some other point.
It's also good because it's a collection of articles and essays by different scholars. So there's something for everyone in there. So for example, there was a chapter on Grand Theft Auto and the Flint crisis and water access and everything. Racism there. And then it got into telecommunication and everything too. So there's a lot there. Definitely not a easy read, but it is enlightening. And I've heard really great things about their other book, Algorithms of Oppression. That was a big hit a couple years ago. So maybe check that one out if it sounds more interesting.
Both of them sound interesting.
Yeah.
I've got to keep them on my radar. Okay. I'll keep checking in with you because I'll probably forget the names. Okay, so we've listed our top fiction and nonfiction picks for July, August, and September. So yes. Now as the bracket works is we're pitting July and August together to choose one, and then pitting August and September again, and then pitting those two picks against each other. Again, hard to explain without the visual. Our goal is to attach the physicals as well when we post the episode update on Instagram. So hopefully that will help. But if you don't have Instagram and you're listening, sorry, we're doing our best. I hope it makes sense. So for July and August, that's for me, for fiction, that's Paradise Rot versus The Push, and Paradise Rot is the pick for that one.
Nice. For me, it's between The Ballad of the Sad Cafe and Stoner won easily.
The way you said easily.
Stoner is just a perfect book, yeah.
Okay, so for nonfiction, Intimations for July is up against Dear Cynthorin in August. No contest. Dear Cynthorin is the winner easily.
Very nice. And for me, I only had Crying in H Mart as I did not have a nonfiction pick for August. So Crying in H Mart.
Beautiful. Okay. So now we're pitting August against September. So for August, it's The Push against September. For me, Things We Lost in the Fire. And so the winner for fiction of those two is Things We Lost in the Fire.
Beautiful pick of that collection. For me, it's between Stoner and Night Bitch. And just for variety, I picked Night Bitch because Stoner won the first round. And also, I love Night Bitch. It's a great book.
I would do the same thing. okay, so for nonfiction, August, the month, not the person, Dear Cynthorin versus September's Crying in H Mart. Because Dear Cynthorin already won the first round, similar to as August just shared, Crying in H Mart is winning the second round. So, yeah.
Nice. And I did not have a nonfiction pick for August, but I did pick The Intersectional Internet for September. So The Intersectional Internet went out here.
Woo! We are almost done with the first round of picks.
Before we move on for our October through December picks, we're going to share what won between those brackets. So if you don't mind me starting, Kendra, my fiction winner for the first half of this episode, so July through September, my top picks are Stoner as my fiction pick, and then Crying in H Mart for my nonfiction pick.
Beautiful choices. For me, my fiction pick for those 3 months is Paradise Rot. And then my nonfiction pick is Dear Cynthorin.
Woohoo, some great books. Okay, so Kendra, I'm dying to know, what was your favorite work of fiction from October?
Practical Magic by Alex Hoffman. So fucking hard to choose. I read a lot of really great books in October. That was my best month of reading. So that was really, really hard. But Practical Magic won out for the nostalgia factor, I think.
Very nice. I desperately want to read that. I love that movie so much. I didn't actually watch it this last year. I need to watch that soon. Wow. Okay. My favorite work of fiction from October was Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Maria Machado. We love her. We've read everything by her, and I think we will continue. Actually, we haven't read everything by her. I still have a short story of hers that I haven't read, but I will read it. Love her. Like, amazing. And this just is a great collection of different horror short stories, oftentimes mixed in with recognizable fairy tales and like horror short stories of your childhood. So think scary stories to tell in the dark, but much more sexual and much better.
Yes, definitely that. I love that. So for my nonfiction pick for October, I didn't read any nonfiction. So that's a flat zero.
Okay. So my favorite work of nonfiction for October is The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls. This is a great autobiography about Jeanette's experiences as a child on the road with her family and then settling eventually in West Virginia and Arizona. It's a very interesting memoir. I would say if you really liked Educated by Tara Westover, it's similar to that. And I listened to an audiobook of this, really enjoyed the audiobook. I do have a physical copy, and I think I might read the physical copy down the line or give it to a friend, but it's a great memoir.
That's one I need to read like ASAP. So as soon as I am ready for my next audiobook, would you recommend the audiobook or would you recommend?
I liked it. Yeah. I like listening to memoirs personally. I don't believe Jeanette Walls read it, but still a good experience.
Good to know. Okay. Are you ready for my fiction pick for November?
Yes.
Your birthday month. So I chose These Violent Delights, which is the young adult retelling of Romeo and Juliet. And I was genuinely very surprised by how good the series was. I think I'm going to reread it because I did listen to it. And sometimes when you listen to fantasy books, in my experience, it's harder to follow along than some other books. But it was pretty good. It was really good. I think this one out because November wasn't a very good month of reading for me. It had most of my 2-star readings were in that month. So that was like my 1 4-star. And so that's why it won.
Wow. I didn't know that you had a month with, or I didn't remember a month with such low ratings. I'm so sorry.
It's fine. I mean, honestly, that was the Secret History month. It was the collective month. It was like the month where I was like, just kept running into some books that weren't for me.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Totally fine. But I would love to hear what your fiction pick is for your birthday month.
So my top work of fiction for November was the book Alec by William DiCanzio. And this is a continuation of the wonderful novel Morris by E.M. Forster. I'm actually wearing, my partner so kindly got me a Morris sweatshirt for part of my Christmas present for the film. Amazing cinematic masterpiece. Highly, highly recommend. Also love the novel by E.M. Forster, which is a novel that was written in 1913 and 14 and not published till 1971 because of its queer content. It's about queer relationships and queer longing during the Edwardian period and prior. It's beautiful. And so Alec is a continuation of that story, which is just so desperately needed. And it's through the perspective of one of the characters, Alec, and it takes place directly after Morris ends, the novel Morris ends, throughout World War I and afterwards. And I just loved it so much. I listened to the audiobook of it. I think I want to get a physical copy. I'm just so happy that Morris is like still being talked about and that this continuation exists. I think it's just such an important story. And I don't know, it just makes me happy that through this book, through Alec being published, maybe more people will read Morris, maybe more people will watch it and just experience that beauty of E.M. Forster's writing. I just love it so much.
I know. I love how much you love it. I love the big smile on your face right now.
I just love it. And it's not just because Baby Hugh Grant and Ben Kingsley are in the film adaptation, but that is part of it. I love the flippy hair and the baldness.
I mean, it really doesn't hurt to have them there.
Yeah. Also, every film adaptation that couple that made Morris did, they also did Howard's End and A Room with a View. They're just great. I know Call Me By Your Name is problematic in a lot of people's eyes and a lot of people hate it, but one of those people also wrote the screenplay for that. So just really important that we have this really powerful queer couple, these two people writing these stories and producing these stories and sharing them and being appreciated for such a long time. It's really cool.
Thank you. Yeah. Why did I say thank you? Thank you, August. I meant
to say, say thank you to them because yeah. Wow, even their Howard's End adaptation is perfect.
I've seen that one. That's the only, I've seen Call Me By Your Name. And I know a lot of people disagree, but it's one of my favorite books and movies of all time. It was gorgeous.
But we don't have to get into that, but still just great that we have a queer couple out there writing these queer and producing these queer stories. Not that Howard's End and A Room with a View are queer at all. Those are pretty het, but you know.
Yeah,
Morris. Yeah,
it is what it is. Yeah.
And it came out in the 80s. Hello, come on. But yeah, I love Alec. That's my top pick for this month. Talk to me about Morris. If anyone wants to talk about Morris, shoot me a message on Instagram. I'll talk about it all goddamn day, obviously, because yeah,
it's okay. We all have that. We literally all have that one book. Well, I think you and I both have like 10 books that we could do that to.
I mean, how could we not? We read a lot.
Anyway, it's my nonfiction pick for November,
yes,
right?
Okay. Yes.
So up next for nonfiction for November for me is In the Dream House. This book's already come up like a million times this year for us. Perfect book. No notes. Just read it. Oh, but trigger warning for like intimate partner violence and pretty scary stuff, but very enjoyable at the same time. So those two things can exist. Yeah.
Yeah. Carmen Maria Machado, just the absolute legend, the GOAT. We love her. Amazing. I did not have a nonfiction favorite for November because I did not read any nonfiction. I guess in the second half of this year, I wasn't as wild about memoirs as I was in the first half, but that's okay.
That's okay, because that's going to happen a few times for me as well. So No worries. So then we're in the final month of the year. For December fiction, my favorite book that I read in December was Once There Were Wolves, which I've mentioned a few times. If you listen to the rap or to the top five episode, it's very good. It's about a an Australian woman who grows up. It's complicated, kind of what it's about. But the basic plot, let me just start. This book is about an Australian woman who works with like a wildlife preservation organization, and her job is specifically to rewild wolves. So she's reintroducing wolves into their natural habitats. And so this book follows her position to reintroduce them in Scotland and how the locals are very, very much against it. And just there's a lot else going on there, but that's like the surface level plot, and it's really great. It's into climate change and reforestation and how important it is to rewild the world.
I remember you telling me about this earlier this month, or earlier last month, because we're now into January, and I want to read that so badly. And it made me think of afterwards, and I hadn't thought of it before, but have you seen that really cool video of what happened when wolves were reintroduced to Yellowstone National Park?
Yes, they actually bring that up a lot in the book.
Yeah, it's crazy. If people don't know what we're talking about, there was a very low wolf population in Yellowstone because of farmers in the area, and wolves were reintroduced in the 2000s, and it completely changed the ecosystem. The video is on YouTube. Highly recommend checking it out. I remember it's only like probably like 5 minutes long or something like that, but really interesting.
Yeah, it's incredibly important. I mean, that video really taught me about it, but the book gets into it about how like essential predators are for the ecosystem, and like that was something I always kind of like surface level knew, but the book really explores why it is, and it like reminded me, I was like, oh yeah, this is why we need to take care of our fucking planet before we all die.
Yeah, so important. Maybe we should set a goal for this year where we read like another, or I know you've already read that, I'm going to read what you're talking about, but we read like an environmental book every single year. There's like this one author that everyone loves. I think his name is like Edmund Wilson, who writes a lot of environmental books. Maybe we could read something by him. I don't know.
I would love that. Yeah. Any books you have like in mind related to like the effects of climate change, or even if it's like dystopian future ones, but like is very environmentally oriented. I'm very much interested in that right now.
Nice.
I also read Migrations, which is another book by her, which is a very similar idea where it's about someone who's going after a specific animal to protect in a very accelerated climate change world.
And this was your top fiction of December?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Fiction and not fiction included, or is it just like about that in an alternative?
It's all fiction. So like actually they've never introduced wolves into Scotland, but it just mentions... Okay. I know, which is actually really cool, because in the afterword, she's like, I hope this book will serve an example of why we need to do this in Scotland specifically. But she does talk about like real things happening in the world, but it's incredibly fictionalized.
Okay. Just got a little confused there.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But that sounds really cool. And I feel like that is a great jumping off point for so many people. So great that that resource is available. My top work of fiction for December actually is in a dystopian universe, or... just, you know, one that's a little too close to reality, and that's Station 11 by Emily St. John Mendel, because Jesse from Jesse K. Reads set up a buddy read for this so kindly, as there's now a television show out on this book, which I haven't watched yet, but I'm excited to, and I really enjoy this. This takes place in a world where the population and just entire world has been ravaged by plague. Very similar to COVID. I will say it was very overwhelming at times listening to this, as it was written well before COVID and felt way too real. The quarantining, the fighting in grocery stores, wanting to get toilet paper and water, that's just, you know, a lot. But it was a great book, really enjoyable. I listened to it, loved the audiobook, was like fully engaged the entire time. And I think I want to eventually get a physical copy. Don't think I'll pick it up anytime soon, but like if somebody wanted to buddy read this with me, I probably would again.
I love that book so much.
Yeah. Wasn't that also one of your top picks from earlier this year, right? Or was it last year?
It was in my top picks for 2020. So I read it August, and I kind of talked about this, but like she she's read it kind of what we thought was the end of the pandemic, towards the end of it, a different generation of the pandemic, it feels. And I read it at the very beginning of the pandemic. So yeah, we had some very different experiences reading it, I think.
Maybe if the pandemic ever ends, knock on wood, everyone wear your mask and get your shots, please. Yeah. Maybe if it ever ends, we can find somebody else to read it. We can all compare our experiences.
We wait like 10 years and get like someone who doesn't even remember the pandemic. Oh my gosh.
Someone born into it, like some of the characters in the book.
Yes, so interesting. And I haven't watched the HBO show yet, but I've heard it's really good.
Yeah. I mean, I trust HBO to do a good job with most things. So yeah, not all things, but okay. So what is your favorite work of nonfiction from December? I'm dying to know.
I don't have one. I didn't read any in December. So I think similarly to you is I just wasn't prioritizing memoirs like I was in the beginning of the year.
Fair. Okay. So I ended the year with a memoir, or a collection of diary entries, actually, by my one true guy, David Sedaris. Man, I fully support, even though some of his diary entries in my pick, I know they're from the late 90s or early 2000s, but God, come on. And that's A Carnival of Snackery by David Sedaris. This book just came out a couple months ago, and it's his diary entries from the late 90s up until 2020. So he gets into COVID talks, actually. It opens just like, you know, a lot of David Sedaris books. It's very funny, gets into some of his family relationships, his experiences going abroad and living abroad was really great. I will say some of his diary entries were like fairly ableist and capitalist. You know, he's a man of a certain privilege. There's going to be blank spaces there, but I do really love his writing and support him. I think that he's overall like a pretty decent person from what I know. And I fully support his sister, Amy Sedaris, who is legit the funniest person on the planet. I love Amy Sedaris so much. If you want to feel better about your day, you should go to her Instagram and just look at all the animals there, because she is a shining light and I love her.
I'll say it again. 2021 was the year of David Sedaris for you.
Yeah. I read like 6 or 7 David Sedaris books.
Which I love.
And I listened to them all. He's a great narrator.
That's so funny. I still need to listen to Me Talk Pretty. I know.
That and When We Were Engulfed in Flames, like I highly recommend both of those. All of his books are great, but those are my favorites.
Good to know. Okay. So now we are going to move to like the second part of the ranking. So for the latter 3 months of the year, October, November, and December, choose 2 from those 3 and then come with their final one to pit up against the first half of the second half of the year. That was a really confusing way to say that. I'm so sorry. But so October was Practical Magic for me versus November, These Violent Delights. Practical Magic won out easily for fiction.
And for me, October was Her Body and Other Parties, and November was Alec. This was really hard. I ended up picking Her Body and Other Parties, even though I fully love Alec.
Yeah, that would be really hard. Okay, so actually for October, November, and December, I only read 1 nonfiction. So I will just give you that winner, because that's going to by default be that winner, and that's In the Dream House, which would have won anyway, no matter what it was up against.
Fair. We are loving Carmen in this round, in this part of the year. For me, for nonfiction, the only nonfiction I read it between October and November was in October, and that's The Glass Castle. So it went by default.
Also another great one. Okay, so then November again was These Violent Delights versus December's Once There Were Wolves. Once There Were Wolves won for me.
Very nice. For me, it was between Alec and Station 11, and this was also really hard, and I ended up picking Alec, and since you don't have any nonfiction, I'm just going to share that now. So that was just A Carnival of Snackery, and so it won. Okay, so now we're going to get into our winners of our fiction and nonfiction picks for October through December.
So that final 2 was Practical Magic for me for fiction versus Once There Were Wolves, and Once There Were Wolves was the winner for that one.
Nice. And for me, it was Her Body and Other Parties versus Alec, and I ended up picking Her Body and Other Parties. Again, a very hard decision.
And again, I only read one book in those 3 months that was nonfiction. So In the Dream House is my overall pick of favorite from October through December.
Nice. And mine was between The Glass Castle and A Carnival of Snackery. And I ended up picking The Glass Castle just because I liked Carnival of Snackery, but it wasn't my favorite David Sedaris of the year. So it felt unfair to pick. And also I really liked Glass Castle. So
now we are choosing our favorite fiction and nonfiction for the second half of the year. So July through August. The two books that are where I'm pitting against each other for fiction.
Half of the year, July through August. July through December.
Why is this so hard to explain?
Because we just keep listing so many titles. It's hard.
It's super hard. Okay. So now we are going to pick our favorite pick for the second half of the year, which is July through December. So confusing. And for me, for fiction, that's Paradise Rot versus Once There Were Wolves. Paradise Rot is the winner for that one. And I was very surprised by those two.
Wow. Both of those. Well, Paradise Rot doesn't seem like it's a book that you would enjoy. So I'm so happy that it was such a great experience for you.
I think that's why I love it so much, is because I went into it with so much skepticism where I was like, this is not for me. And then I was like, oh, Paradise Lost imagery, you got me.
Nice. Okay. Wow. So for me, it was for fiction, it was between Stoner and Her Body and Other Parties. This was really hard. These are very different books. And I ended up picking Stoner. It's arguably one of my favorite books of last year. I listed it as my second favorite book of the year. And I love it so much. Would read it again. Highly recommend. Want to read more by John Williams.
So, yeah. I can imagine that was a very tough decision.
It was so hard. I was like, do I want like this great feminist energy or do I want this sad academic? And I'm like, that describes my entire being. Like, how can I divide that up? And I ended up picking the sad academic. Just, I don't know why. Maybe I was having a hard day.
You just need to write the sad academic feminist energy book of your dreams. We're waiting. I need it.
That is everything by Radcliffe Hall and Jean Rees, who you're going to be reading soon. Kate Chopin, yes. Let's go to them instead.
You're so right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. All older texts. Why did I list only old ones? I'm sorry. Trying to read more contemporary fiction. Okay. What's your nonfiction picks? I'm dying to know.
Okay. So that's Dear Cynthorin versus In the Dream House. This was an incredibly, incredibly difficult decision for me. I'm not kidding. These are two of my favorite books of the entire year. Very narrowly, Dear Cynthorin is the winner for this.
That seems like a Sophie's Choice situation. I'm so sorry that you had to deal with that. Wow. Yes,
definitely. Thank you.
Wow. Is it appropriate to call things Sophie's Choice situations?
I mean, I do it and no one's called me out on it. So
just seems a little fucked up, but you know, that movie is fucked up. That situation is fucked up. So
yeah, I've actually never seen that movie. I just know the reference.
Meryl Streep's Polish accent. Hello.
I know I want to see it, but as you might not know this about me, but I cry sometimes. When I get sad, and Holocaust movies are understandably a very hard movie to get through. So I tend to avoid them because unless I want to cry a lot.
See, I'm actually in secret a 60-year-old white father. So I love World War II movies. If I can just recommend some right now that are really fucked up, Son of Saul, which I believe is a Polish movie that came out a couple years ago, really fucked up, but also really good, very historically accurate. And then literally one of the most, if not the most intense movie I've ever seen, Come and See. Don't need to say anything about it. It's just called Come and See. It is hard. It's rough, but yeah. You would hate it because it is like, it's one of the most, it was banned in the USSR because it's the most graphic depiction of war I've ever seen personally in like its realism. And then also it's like very anti-Russia because it's Russia just ravaging and destroying this countryside.
Why am I like, kind of, why do I kind of want to see it now?
It's a great movie. It is hard. But Come and See is a great, if you want to watch something fucked up, just be prepared. It's the horrors of war, very realistically portrayed.
Oh, my basic ass has only seen like Life is Beautiful, which is a fantastic film, and Schindler's List. So like, I know those are, everyone has mostly either seen those or heard of those, but I gotta go see.
See, if you were a 60-year-old white father like me, you would have seen these, and then you would have watched all the Ken Burns documentaries. Yes, I've seen Band of Brothers in the Pacific. Of course, I'm a 60-year-old white father. Like, hello.
My Yosemite dad.
That's me. Okay. Did I share my nonfiction pick? I don't know. How did we? Oh, we were talking about Sophie's Choice. That's how we got here.
Oh, yeah, because it was my nonfiction pick. Wow, yeah. We were on one. So it's your turn to share your nonfiction.
Tangents today. Tangents and tangents. So for me, for nonfiction, it was another very difficult decision. Not as hard as Kendra's. And that was because it was between Crying in H Mart and The Glass Castle. Both fantastic memoirs. So I would recommend highly. And I ended up picking Crying in H Mart because it's just a perfect book.
Also, I can imagine a very tough decision. And I 100% agree with your choice, though. Such a great book.
Thank you. Thank you. So we have our top winners of this half of the year. Should we compare them to those of our from the first half of the year and declare a winner, I guess?
Yes. Another very difficult choice, I think, in some cases. For me, the fiction winner for the first half of the year was A Little Life. And then, as I just shared, the fiction winner for the second half of the year was Paradise Brought, which actually, again, like the way this bracket works out, like Paradise Brought, I wouldn't say was my number two favorite book of the year, but because of how the eliminations worked, that's what ended up there. So A Little Life easily won. That was my favorite book of the entire year, and truly like nothing could compare to it in my eyes. Really great.
Yeah, I understand that decision fully. I have not read Paradise Brought, but we're both big supporters of A Little Life. We have a whole episode on it. Mm-hmm. If you know anything about A Little Life, you probably saw that episode first because it's by far our most popular one. But yeah, we just fully love Jude St. Francis and Willem. For me, my top fiction pick for the first half of the year was American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis. Buy this book used if you read it. Fuck Bret Easton Ellis. So between that and Stoner won easily. Not easily. I love both of these books for very different reasons, but Stoner was my top pick without question.
I know. It's hard. There's some where you're like, oh, that would blow that out of the water. But then other ones are like, they're so close.
It's too close.
It's too close. Okay. So then my winners for nonfiction for the first half of the year was Little Weirds. And the second half of the year was Dear St. Theron. And Dear St. Theron won out. So great.
Okay, I'm for sure going to be picking that up soon after I finish Death of Vivek. Wow. Okay, so for me, my nonfiction pick for the first half of the year was In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. We love her. Have we said it enough? And then also for the end of the year was Crying in H Mart by Michelle Zauner. This was really hard. I love both of these books, both very powerful memoirs, both ones that I think everyone should read. This was a really hard decision, and I ended up picking In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado because, wow, what a talent. And also the first book of hers that I read. So
it's such a good memoir. Even if you've read Carmen Maria Machado's like other work and maybe you're like, this maybe isn't for me, because I understand like for some people, like her work is like her short stories are typically very dark and very sexual, and that's not for everyone. I would say like the memoir, I think, is still worth reading, even if you don't love the other ones.
Yeah, I fully agree in that. I think just like her experimentation with genre and form throughout makes it very unique. I've never read a memoir like that, which is one of the reasons why I ended up picking it. I think it was just like crafted so well, and the way that she structured it and the like playing with different tropes made the very intense subject matter like a little bit easier to read and digest. And I feel like it's a really great way to like introduce a lot of people to these ideas. It gets into like intimate partner violence and just like identity as well. And I feel like this would be a great book to give somebody who's maybe not as open-minded, that you want to be like, hi, here's a great memoir that I think you'll thoroughly enjoy. And maybe in the process of enjoying it, you'll learn something. So.
Totally agree. Yeah. Wow. What a year of reading. Just real quick, were there any goals you set for yourself for 2021 reading-wise that you met or maybe you adjusted?
Yeah, so my reading goal is I wanted to start off the year wanting to read 55 books, and I quickly reached that. Then I changed it to 65, beat that, so I read 90 books in 2021, which is the most I've ever read in a single year. And my biggest goal was to read more contemporary fiction, because as I feel like we both said quite a bit, with our schooling, with both undergrad and graduate school, we read a lot of classics, we read a lot of canonical fiction. And so we hadn't really read anything, or at least I personally hadn't read anything or a lot of things post like 1960. And so I wanted to read a lot of newer releases, and I did that this year. I read a lot of contemporary fiction and I really enjoyed it. And I feel a lot better about like the wider variety of texts that I've read. And it's something that I'm going to continue doing into this year.
I can definitely tell that you stepped out of your like reading comfort zone this year. And I try to do that as well. And I wasn't as successful, I think, and from my vantage point as you were. And so that's what my goals are for going into 2022.
So, what were your goals for 2021? And do you feel like you reached them?
I wanted to read 65 books as well, and also did reach that. I read 90 novels and then read 3 poetry collections, which I love poetry collections. I kind of want to take a seat back from them though, because I read them a lot and I read them like cover to cover, and it kind of gets in the way of like reading novels, but which is fine for most people. This is a digression. And then another thing, I wanted to read more classics, and guess what I did not do? I think I read like 3 classics for the entire year. But also another thing is I wanted to really just allow myself to read what I wanted to read, because for so much of our lives, especially as academics, I didn't have that freedom. So I think going into 2022, I do want to push myself to read stuff I don't typically read for fun. So starting with some classics, that's why I kind of started with Jane Eyre as well, is even though, because I've read that before and I know I like it. So I'm hoping that will like remind myself of that muscle. And then I want to read like My Antonia, and like, maybe this is the year I'll get to master Margarita. Like, I'm no promises, but I'm just trying to push myself to read books that last year I wasn't letting myself read because I was so focused on the number of each month. Where this year, if I read one fucking book a month, but they're like high quality books I really enjoy, then I'm going to be proud of myself.
Fair. I think that's great. Definitely something that I want to continue or try to do in this in 2022 as well, as like not focus as much on the number. There's definitely some classics like what you were saying that I didn't get to last year that I want to read this year. I feel like I like really put classics on the back burner last year, and like I want to get back in the swing of reading them more often. Maybe even just like one a month would be nice for me. I feel like that's a realistic goal. Like I have I see Nightwood, which has been on my bedside table for like a year, by Juna Barnes, one that I've read portions of that I desperately want to finish. And then, you know, all these other books like Christopher Isherwood, all these people that I want to check out. So maybe a goal for this year, who knows? Probably don't want to set any goals because I won't follow through with them.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard, especially how unpredictable the year already feels like it's going to be. Yeah. So we will see. We'll take it month by month. And we'll do our best. But thank you.
That sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah. Thank you everyone for giving us a listen. I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, if wherever you're listening, please do rate, review, and subscribe. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe to us and give us a written review if you have time, or give us a star review. Anything that helps. It really helps other people find our podcast, and then we have the motivation to keep doing it. And then also on Spotify, please do follow us. And now you can rate or review us. I can't remember if you can do a written review, but you can do the star review for sure. And if you want to reach out to us, you can find us collectively on Booked On Podcast on Instagram, or individually. You can find me, Kendra, at Kendra Lapp on Instagram.
And you can find me, August, at Iggy Poop on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening today. We hope that you're having a great start to your 2022, and that you're being safe out there, and that you have a great rest of your day.
Bye.